Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm John Wilson. Welcome to These Three, a series in which I talk to artists, musicians, writers, directors, actors, photographers, all sorts of creative people, in fact, about their artistic lives by focusing on three key works, one that they made themselves, that they're particularly proud of, one by somebody else that they wish they'd made, and one that they're working on right now. In this edition, I'm joined by a young man who, at the age of 22, won the Brits Critics' Choice Award in 2013. He was named Songwriter of the Year at the Ivor Novello Awards the following year. He made his mark with the singles Another Love, Can't Pretend, and Real Love, a Beatles cover that was used for a John Lewis Christmas advert, that one with the penguin. Now back with his third album, Jubilee Road. I'm delighted to welcome Tom O'Dell. Tom, you've brought three songs in: the song I wrote, the song I wish I'd written, and the song I'm writing. Before we hear about them, what got you writing songs in the first place?
I became bored of playing, of learning people's music.
Taking piano lessons as a kid.
Yeah, and I was always learning songs. Maybe it's less boredom, but it felt like the next step, learning these songs, and then go, I think I can make one like that, and then that's how it started.
How old would you have been when you
about
first...
12, I reckon.
12 years old when you first...
Yeah.
...played the piano or started writing songs?
No, I was 7 when I started playing piano and 12 when I started writing songs.
Wow, do you remember the first one?
I do remember. It was a melody with a little lyric about the stars, and it's a very simple melody, quite sweet.
You remember how it goes?
Yeah, I do. Yes, it went... Du-du-du-du-du-du-du-dum. And then look into the stars and I can see your eyes. It was naive, but it's quite beautiful in its naivety.
You ever used the melody again?
I've tried to a few times, but never managed to get it into anything.
When you first wrote that song, did you think, I can do this? This is what my life is going to be about from now. Was there a moment of revelation?
Well, I think with each year that passes, that moment becomes more and more sort of Hollywood in its like poignance. kind of like the memories start glowing like an old film, you know. Yeah, I think it was a real moment. I seem to remember it. I think often memories are sort of like exaggerated by photographs and videos and stuff, and you confuse it with a memory. I think this one was almost definitely not photographed and definitely have no reason to remember it exactly, but the fact that it was, I felt like it was the first song, and I remember feeling that this was significant, and I was only 11 or 12, so it must have felt significant to me.
Where was that? Was that a school music room or at home?
No, that was at home.
Oh, so you had a piano at home?
Yeah, but I think I'd only just got it. My grandparents had bought... I begged them for a piano for a while, for the first few years of whilst I played, but I just had this sort of keyboard, and then eventually they bought me one. I cherished it so much, this piano, and still do to this day.
Not the same piano. You still got the same one?
I still have the same piano. It's still in my home.
Your parents' place.
But actually, it's funny, when we were making the first album, I was quite difficult from sort of day one with making the records, and you know, some of the the things you become difficult with when you've had a bit of success, and you people get a bit annoyed because you want to do something a certain way. But I had that right from the start.
Okay.
Is I really wanted to do it a certain way. And one of those things was the fact that I wanted to use my piano that was from my where I grew up on the recording on the first album.
So, so that's what we hear on Another Love, Can't Pretend.
Yeah, Another Love, Grow Older Me, Can't Pretend. Not all of them, though. I think there was a couple that weren't on that piano.
And was there resistance from the producer at the time then?
Resistance from everyone because it cost a fortune to get a van to go down to Chichester, pick up this piano and bring it to London.
No, it was just the cost. It wasn't that, we've got better pianos than that.
There was that as well. I think they thought I was slightly insane. And also, it's funny, when you're unsuccessful, you're insane. And when you're successful, you're a genius. which is, I think...
But you put your foot down. That's interesting. You're only 20 years old or something?
20, yeah.
But you said, no, I'm having this piano. That's the one that I got going on and it's important to me.
And I think I'd gone through lots of pianos up to that point. I'd tried pianos and tried to replicate the sound, but I couldn't get the sound. And I think some of the songs on the first album, like particularly like Grow Older Me and Another Love, like they're very unique in their piano part. They're very sort of percussive. It's used almost as a rhythm instrument, the piano. And so I think I tried it. Often pianos can sound quite muddy, and even like beautiful Steinways, grand Steinways, 6 foot Steinways, that probably wouldn't have been right. Even, an £80,000 piano, not that I had that at my disposal, but even that wouldn't have been right because it can be quite warm and it's not quite bright enough, and I needed that brightness.
That cut, which you get on that. So, the song I wrote.
Yeah.
And are we going to go with Another Love?
We'll go with Another Love, yeah.
I mean, it was such a significant song. It was such a breakthrough song for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you remember writing it?
I do. I do remember writing it. I think I wrote it in parts. I had that riff, which was the sort of piano ding, which is also the verse melody. I think I had that for a long time. I had this little bed sit in Brighton where I had a keyboard up there, and I used to write and write and write. And it's where I sort of moved away from home when I was 18.
And did you have words that then fitted?
No.
Or you actually put the words to those chords?
No, I don't think I would have had any words. And it was, but then the rest of the song was written in Chichester. I wanna take you somewhere. It was a February or March time. So cold. The first daffodils of spring were coming up. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright.
So that was looking out the window and seeing.
Yeah, and that was
nature bursting forth out of the window, and then it goes into the song.
That was the first line for the song. It all sort of flowered, dare I say, from there, from that one line, and then the rest of the song grew very quite quickly actually after that line. On another love, all my tears be used all. On another love, all my tears be used all.
There's a great maturity to that song, given that you were, what, 20, 21?
Probably 19.
When you wrote this, I guess, because when we heard that song, you were 21. So, and you'd written that a couple of years before. So, did you think at the time, this is something special? This is going to get me onto another level?
No, I don't think so. No, I think. No, I thought it was good, but I was so excited by around that time by writing any songs. I couldn't believe it was like this sort of. I discovered this whole palette. So I don't know. I didn't think it was going to be successful, no.
At what point did somebody say, this is a single, this is going to be a hit, this is going to make your name?
Well, they didn't. That's the thing, is that I had this whole album recorded, a long way down, and then we wanted to do an EP before that, that the label wanted to put out. They put it on the EP because they thought it was just a warm-up thing. The radio in the UK wouldn't play it. It was too downbeat, and it wasn't a ballad, and it wasn't an upbeat song.
It's pretty moody, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of like they didn't know where it sat, and I think it got a good sort of, people liked it, and it became a big hit in Europe over the course of about 3 months, and then the British radio then had to start playing it.
Yeah.
The label definitely wasn't going to be the main single, no.
I remember hearing that song and then meeting you, actually, not long afterwards, and just being amazed at how young you were, because it's a sound and your voice and the delivery, and I guess the confidence that you seem to have on that record, on that recording, seemed way beyond your years.
Right.
Who were you listening to at the time? Who were the influences?
I was very into the band Fleet Foxes around that time. I was, like, obsessed with them. And that's probably where that massive harmony came from. I was always listening to so much music, and really from the most sort of avant-garde to pop, and it was always seeking it out. And it would have been loads of 70s stuff as well. Like, you know, you mentioned Elvis Costello. I would have been listening to him.
Even really, I should just mention, because as we were walking into the studio, we were talking about Costello there and some of the work, how prolific he was.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm surprised you were listening to Costello when you were that young. I mean, not an obvious artist for a young man to listen to.
No, and probably younger I was listening to him. I mean, I was really interested, around that time, I was really interested in this guy, and his name's just gone out of my head. But he was the guy, he was sort of 80s, he played the cello, and he died of AIDS. This Is How We Walk the Moon, the song was called. Anyway, if I think of it, I'll let you know.
I can't think who you mean.
Oh, let me. You know what? I can just look it up.
Let's just Google it.
Let's Google it, because it is significant, because I was listening to a lot of this guy around that time. You'll know him. He went electro.
And there's loads of listeners at the moment shouting the name of this guy and going, "Come on, we all know who that is." And
Arthur Russell.
Arthur Russell.
Yeah, do you know Arthur Russell?
No.
Oh, check him out. A bit later, he did a lot of electronic dance, sort of disco music, but he did these albums that were very, like, plays the cello and he sings over the cello.
Wow.
And it's kind of really melodic and beautiful, but quite quirky.
And that was feeding in. So there was a melting pot of influences. But so you were really just following your own instincts then as a songwriter.
Totally. And I think probably as well, I was just remember constantly feeling overwhelmed in a great way by the music. When I wrote that song, Another Love, I just got back between Brighton and London, but living in Chichester. And so I was seeing so many gigs because I was doing all these open mics. And so there was so much music
washing over you and soaking it all up.
Yeah, and I was soaking it up,
Which brings us neatly to the next section, the song I Wish I Had Written.
Yeah, I found this very difficult to choose because there's so many songs.
But in a way, it's not necessarily your favourite song, something that you admire as a songwriter.
Yeah.
Something that you just think, you know, how you get to those chords or those words or that feel.
Yeah.
What would it be then?
Well, I'll go with Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen.
Right.
And I think it's...
Off Born to Run, that
one. Off Born to Run, track one on Born to Run. And I think... For me, it's the sensation of optimism and hope that he manages to record in that song.
A screen door slams, Mary's dress waves.
I think is remarkable. Like, I wouldn't say it's through composed because I think that there is repetition in the melody, but the way it grows and grows and grows and grows is something I've always loved in songwriting.
Yeah, it's not formulaic. It's not verse, chorus, bridge.
No.
There is a sense of a story unfolding as well, isn't there? And you're on the road, but you're not sure where that road is going to end.
Yeah.
Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for.
It's the celebration of the imperfections. There's a lovely quote, which you might know, which I'll definitely misquote, and I should stop misquoting things, but that Leonard Cohen says about... It's the cracks which let the light in, or
that's exactly it.
It's something like that, and I think I'm constantly drawn to that within art, of this celebration of art, of our deepest imperfections and art and the things that make us human. And I think Springsteen does that so wonderfully.
But it's interesting. I mean, he's almost the diametric opposite to Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen is all about the darkness, but as he said, it's the cracks that let the light through.
Yeah.
And you get that sense of hope and optimism. With Springsteen, often there is a sense of joy and wonder and that kind of big, bright, shiny optimism. And yet there's a darkness, which is
undercutting. The darkness on the edge of town.
The darkness on the edge of town.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know, there's that line in Thunder Road, "You ain't pretty, but hey, you're all right, and that's all right with me." And it's such like an Americana line. Like, but there's just something about it that just gets me every time. And it's the celebration that that you and I, we're not perfect. We're never going to please everyone.
Come take my hand.
I would have heard that song when I moved to Brighton. Guy I met called Henry, who became one of my best friends, still one of my best friends. And I'd not really heard Springsteen until I moved to Brighton. I'd always heard it and always heard that quite grotesque American patriotism that he's so often confused with, I think, by us Brits particularly.
Well, or by people like Ronald Reagan, who used Born in the USA as a campaign theme song. Which, and that's happened many times.
And I think it's strange because I think there's this little fence you've got to get over, and it's so easy to get over, but you realise it's not that. But I think on the sort of surface of it can appear from afar slightly sort of Trumpy music.
Have you ever played Thunder Road?
Have I sang it?
Yeah,
I have.
You've covered it?
Just to myself. Yeah, I've just learnt it myself. But my friend Henry's seen him 40 times, right?
Right.
So he played me his music. I went, no, it's like Born in the USA. It's like, I don't like it, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Then I remember hearing Thunder Road, and that was the song that was like, hang on a minute. And then suddenly it's like, I got like 3 years of Springsteen exploring to do, and you know, and you work your way through and you end up on like Nebraska and...
Yeah, when it gets really dark.
And it's just, the storytelling is just remarkable.
And Thunder Road as a songwriter, what do you admire about it? Everything as a whole complete piece of work, its words, music, melody, and that sense of the journey.
I think there's some songs I could choose for this podcast that would have been like, I can break it down. Like, you look at like God Only Knows by the Beach Boys, it's like that song is like harmonically superior to any other song, and the melody, the way the melody ties it against the harmony so that it doesn't sound weird, even though it's the most unorthodox chords.
Absolutely. Anyway, Calvin Kaye's bass playing. I love that song.
Yeah, and it's just... like, and it's weird because I just learned that song because I did it on TV on Friday night, and honestly, that is the best song I've ever written. And I obviously I'm talking about Thunder Road, but I think the reason I didn't want to choose one that I could sort of explain musically, you can get to the depths of sort of the theory of it, of why does it work, and it's because I think increasingly I'm veering away from that with music, is I don't want to know about that stuff. And I, with Thunder Road, it's not very complex. Harmonically, it's very simple. Like a lot of Springsteen's music, it's never very complex harmonically. And melodically, it's not very complex. But he's just managed to encapsulate the essence of what it means to be free as a human being. And that, for me, is what's so brilliant about it. And I, every year, and I've done it since I was 19 or 20, I remember it was just after I signed my record deal, and I bought this car and I drove down to the West Country. I think it was to see my grandma. And I ran down the windows and listened to Thunder Road, and I was on my own. I drove, and it was the summer, and I listened to that song and I blasted it up. I've done it year on year, and I do it with Born to Run each year, and I wind down the windows and listen to that album from start to finish. And I tell you, it's the most free I'll ever feel. And you turn your phone off and you just go. It's just like, it's just amazing.
Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen, the song that Tom O'Dell wishes he'd written. So, Tom, the song that you are writing, I mean, songwriters have always got music, always got words pouring out. I mean, do you write down on your phone? Or do you have to grab a notebook?
I wrote last night, actually. Do you want me to play you a bit of a voice memo?
Yeah, so this is brand new. This is
Last night, I went to see my nephew and then I got home at like 7 or something. And I just had this wonderful 3 hours of playing piano.
How old's your nephew?
He's 3.5 weeks.
3.5 weeks, okay. So were you inspired then?
If I'm being honest, when I was driving back, I felt quite sort of maudlin. There's no song there, but maybe it's just a nice example of...
Yeah.
I mean, it's really embarrassing.
This is fascinating. So this is back at home after you...
Yeah. Yeah, some of the... I mean, my voice sounds weird and everything.
Yeah, but you're just sort of finding your way into the song, I guess.
Yeah.
How developed is this? Was this the
No, completely first... undeveloped.
This is almost first take.
Yeah, and this... It's a good chance this will never get finished.
Yeah. But that's really interesting. So you sit down and... Are you patching in words there, or do you have those words written down?
I think there was a couple of lines... which I'd written down. I just have a notebook as well. But this is Idea 1000, new recording 1000.
So hang on, this is on your... Oh, wow. So you just go into voice memos and then you just hit record and then you just start playing and...
No, it'll be... I'll hit record when I feel like I've got some sort of thing.
How many songs are on there on that phone?
Well, there's 1000.
Oh, literally 1000?
Yeah, but this is only 2 years old. This is a few days ago on a sound check.
But Springsteen-ish, that
Yeah,
one,
so this was a middle eight for a song. There's this idea I've been working on for like 3 weeks, and I've been trying to write a middle section for it.
What's the song called?
I don't know at the moment.
So you don't start with... Some songwriters actually have to start with a title.
Sometimes I do.
This
is so loose. So I got the band there, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
I wonder if I did... that one is good, actually. Oh, that's my new one. I don't know. That's the sort of musical side, and then there's a more wordy side that's going on.
The iPhone or the smartphone has changed everything for songwriters. I did a program a few years ago with Paul McCartney, and he said... The songs had to be so good that if you were falling asleep, they were in your head, you had to remember them in the morning.
I've heard him say that.
And you know, if they didn't lodge there, if you couldn't then go to your writing partner, if you couldn't sit down with John Lennon and go, look, I've got this, and if it didn't just pour out, it wasn't any good.
Yeah.
Whereas now, any idea that comes to you, of course, it's like a mini
recording
studio. I don't know.
Because it's interesting, I've heard him say that, is that if he couldn't remember it, there was no point recording it. And like, I put all this... dross. I mean, you heard that in there. Like,
I wouldn't say that's dross, though, Tom. I mean, the seeds have great stuff there, but that's the thing, isn't it? It's sorting out the seeds.
It's sorting out, and I think my theory is opposite to, I mean, the great McCartney says...
Sir Paul,
is I'd say I have forgotten good ideas before, like, and I have this fear that it's just going to go. I think I'm a harder worker than I am a talented person. I've always had that fear of like, I'm very slow and it takes me a lot of songs to get to the right one.
You're a grafter.
I'm a grafter.
And on the new album, Jubilee Road, this is a really observational album. It seems to be a series of vignettes of portraits of people in a particular place. Jubilee Road, is it based on where you lived?
I think I've come to the conclusion that it's as much the sort of street I grew up on as it is the street I lived on a few years ago, as much as it could be this sort of street in my imagination. And I think it's inspired by this road I did live on. But I think it was always just... It's funny, because literally this morning, before I came here, Russ, who's my old neighbour from this street, he popped over, because he lives about 10 minutes away, because I don't live there anymore. And he came over and he said he came to the... Because I played in London last week. One of the characters in the song is inspired by him.
Right.
And he knows that, and he hadn't heard the song. And he went and bought the album on Friday, and he came to the show, and he said... And he came to my door and he said, I heard it. And he had tears in his eyes. And he was like, and I said, you know that it's not directly about you, but it kind of is about you. And because there's a line that is, his kids are in China and his wife's up in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Now, his wife is actually alive, but he was like, but for some reason he was like, it reminded me of my first girlfriend who died.
Is that the Mr. Bouvier character?
Yeah, the Mr. Bouvier, yeah.
Yeah. Who you in the song is seen from across the street.
Yeah.
He looks sad and grey.
Yeah, and he came to my door this morning. It's like we had this bizarre sort of... But he's amazing. He's become a really dear friend. Like, and he comes round and he tells me about his life. And
how old is he?
He's 70. Yeah, or a bit older than...
So he spotted himself in the song.
Yeah, I mean, he sort of knew that that was about him. I don't think I want to walk down that road anymore, because I almost want to tell them that it's like it's inspired, but
it's artistic license.
Yeah, but it's like I don't think anyone would recognise themselves apart from Russ did, because I told him and he looked out for it. But the characters begin with those people on that road, but I think I took them in so many different places.
You've come full circle. You started by describing how another song, Another Love, was written and looking out the window and seeing the daffodils, and that feeds in.
Yeah.
In a weird way, this is what you've done on Jubilee Road. You're looking out the window, seeing people. And you are quite an observational songwriter in that way then, I guess, aren't you?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I think the bad songs I write are when I'm looking in. I really do. I think when you're desperately searching within yourself for meaning is when it starts to become muddy, and there's a clarity that I think one can have from empathy, I think. Songwriting is the ultimate empathy challenge, is you're trying to constantly understand what it means to be someone else and what it means to be myself as well. But you can only do that through trying to understand how other people feel about certain situations. And I think that's ultimately the thing that one has to be as a songwriter. And I always remember this one bit of advice I got from Chris Difford from Squeeze. So he was my tutor when I was in Brighton, like songwriting tutor. And
wow.
And he's an amazing man. We're still in touch.
Great songwriter as well.
Amazing, amazing songwriter. And it could have so easily chosen one of his songs as one of the best songs, you know, or the song I'd like to have written. But he always used to say, if you ever feel that you haven't got anything to write about, or when he has that problem, he takes a walk along the promenade in Brighton and all he has to hear is one conversation from a passerby, and there's an entire novel there of where you could go. And I think that's so true, and it's been so helpful, that advice.
Keep looking around you, Tom. Keep listening out for those conversations and keep looking out the window. Keep writing songs. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, nice to talk, yeah.
Thanks very much, Tom Odell.
Thanks.
And if you enjoyed Tom Odell, listen out for the other episodes featuring the likes of Paul Weller, Hayley Atwell, Jonathan Yeo, Lucy Prebble, Kwame Kwayama, Guy Garvey, and there are many more on the way. Please do rate and review the series. It really does help other people find these three. And subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. Also, have a look at the website where we've got more information about every guest, photos, previews of forthcoming episodes. We're on Twitter and Instagram, of course. These Three is produced and presented by me, John Wilson, in association with Analog Folk. Thanks for listening.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.